Hello and welcome to our INE office hours call for the month of May 2017. I don't know about you, but it seems like this year is going by awfully fast. It's like May already? That's crazy. It's insane. It's just beyond belief. But I'm glad it's May because I love the weather in May and I'm enjoying it, and I'm enjoying actually getting outside and working. So I'm hoping that you're trying to create some balance in your life as well, because I find that when it's really nice out, I should be out there right now, but I had these other calls where I needed to be at my desk and I didn't make it down there. But I'm just sitting in my backyard and using my laptop on the table and just really enjoying it. So, you know, it's really important for us, especially as practitioners who are caring for others, that we take time for ourselves and we take time to incorporate work and play and enjoyment. And for me, when I was sitting outside all day yesterday in the sun and getting on phone calls, it didn't feel like work to me at all. I mean, not that this feels like work either, but I just felt really good. So I want to thank you for being here. And for those of you who are new, welcome. And the way that these calls work is we call it office hours because we're just open for answering questions or, you know, talking to you about client issues or talking to you about the understanding of materials in the various programs. This call is open to people in our variety of our programs, our NEPT program, the Nutritional Endocrinology Practitioner Training, Insulin Resistance Program, and the Digestive Program. So anybody in those various programs can come to these calls and ask whatever questions come up. And sometimes people ask questions about marketing, and that's fine too. How do I get this out there? How do I do a presentation on this topic to attract clients? I'm totally open to all of those questions. My understanding was that Laura had a question about a stool test, and Lynn just Skyped it to me. I ran out of hard drive space on my computer yesterday, and it has been quite interesting to try to get files open and all that. So I think Skype is the only way that I could get it there. So good. So I've got that. So if you have specific questions about this, Laura, I can just raise your hand and I'll open your line up right now and we can do it. So the way that this works is you can type your questions in the chat or the Q&A. Let me see if there's any chat questions typed in. There are a few questions typed in there, and usually what I like to do, can you just hang 1 second? My son is calling me. You okay? Oh, okay. What's up? Yeah, I'm on a call. Are you hurt? No, I don't have time. What? I will definitely do therapy when you get back. Okay. Thanks. Bye. So sorry about that. When 18-year-olds call you, usually it's they need help. So that's the first thing I asked him. Are you hurt? He's fine. All right. So what we're going to do is I like to look at the ones that have been typed in first, Laura, unless you have a like pressing appointment that you need to get to. I'll open your line. So I'd like to do that so that the people who typed in their questions in advance know they just listen to the beginning and get their questions answered. You okay with that, Laura?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have anything going on for a couple of hours, so that's fine.
Okay, good. All right, I'll go ahead and do that. There's only three. And then as you listen, you can type into the Q&A. You can type into the chat and have a conversation. Chat is really the favorite way for just having a conversation with colleagues, and Lynn usually will see chats and puts in links and stuff. So as I'm speaking and somebody asks questions about something, if there's a link, Lynn usually puts the link in the chat. So that's a good place for you to be. But if you have a question that you want me to answer and you want it to bring it to my attention, you can put it in the Q&A or the chat. It's just when the chat gets real busy, they fly by and I don't get to see them as well. So it looks like there were three questions, one from Kang in Singapore. Said I'm an NEPT student, have completed the first 6 modules and request the opening of module 7 and beyond so I can maintain my online learning. My request was sent to help desk, but I received no response. Okay, so I will make sure, Lynn, make a note of that. And Czar created a little place where we can open up people's modules for them if they get caught up. Most people take longer to do the modules so that they don't request it, but yes, we can totally do that. So Lynn, make a note of that, please. And also check in with Christina as to why the request to help desk wasn't answered. Nora, for clients with blood thinners like Coumadin, it's not safe to take any supplemental omega-3s like DHAs, et cetera. Is there a way to help them otherwise? Oh, you're bringing up a really big thorn in my side. Let me finish reading your question. And what would be contraindicated for them in the IRCT protocol? Yeah, so with Coumadin, the blood thinner, it's not safe to take natural substances that thin the blood, like omega-3s, right? Not DHA specifically, it's more EPA that thins the blood. DHA doesn't usually have that effect. But here's, I'm just going to get on my soapbox here. My feeling is that we, these doctors should learn how to adapt the doses of the Coumadin so that they can lower the Coumadin dose when people are taking omega-3s and other herbs and stuff. So, you know, that's my feeling. Like, yeah, you can help them, of course. And really, DHA, I would look DHA up. My understanding and knowledge about the mechanism by which DHA works is it doesn't thin the blood the way that EPA does. So you do have to be careful about EPA. Ideally, you would have the person talk to their doctor and say, look, I want to take these omega-3s. How can you adjust my Coumadin dose? And there's ways they can tell it. They can look at their prothrombin time and other things like that to see how their clotting factors are doing. What else would be contraindicated for them in the IRSPT protocol? Well, certainly all the nutrients like zinc and B vitamins and magnesium are fine. It's not contraindicated. But what I'd suggest you do is to be sure is to go to thedrugs.com and look up Coumadin and look in this section for contraindications in terms of foods and herbs, because I can't memorize every single one of those. So I would look there and then whatever it is, then you be careful with. But again, really could be a good idea if there's a way you can reach out to this person's doctor and have a conversation and see if you can work with the doctor to get the medication doses lowered. The most difficult part has been that the client can't have any greens at all. And that's quite frankly a big load of BS. Okay. Again, they don't know what they're talking about. They don't know anything about nutrition. They're concerned that there's vitamin K. And then they take these people who need nutrition and need support more than most, and they take them off the most nutritious foods on the planet. So what's a person to eat if they don't eat greens? Lots of grains, lots of bread, lots of pasta. So yeah, I really, this stuff just ticks me off. And this is one of the reasons I do what I do. So I really think we need to educate these folks to see. And because it's a dangerous medication and the risks are really high, you've got to be super, super careful. So if the doctor said no greens at all, then you, your hands are tied. Because if you say, it's no big deal, you go ahead and do greens, then you're screwed if anything happens. They're going to blame you. So the best regard would be to create a relationship with the doctor, have a conversation, see if you can educate them, and see what you can come up with. As far as the protocol is concerned for insulin resistance, I mean, you can certainly get them off all, if they're off of all greens, and you can get them off all of the sugary foods and get them on more nuts and seeds and avocados and coconut. And if they're not vegetarian, fish and food and meat, but then they're going to end up with too much of that to get their calories. So you can do a lot of it. I would definitely be testing their blood sugar, but you got to be careful of that, because if they're on Coumadin and they take too much Coumadin, then the little pinprick from the needle could cause them to bleed excessively. That actually could be a good way to check as well, is poke them with a needle periodically just to see if they're on the right dose. But I'd have a conversation with the doctor. I wish there was an easy answer to this, because these people need our help, but we can put ourselves in a high-risk situation by recommending things against what the doctor's saying, which I think we're totally – that would be totally safe, but I wouldn't do it because of the risk. Shamima has a client who has extremely severe eczema. What extra adjustment to her diet would you recommend apart from the 30-day reset diet? Gut healing. You really got to look at her gut, because mostly when people have eczema is an atopic disease, an autoimmune disease, and the leaky gut can contribute. I'd be getting them off of you know, all the gluten and all that kind of stuff, but I really be looking at her gut and dysbiosis, do a stool test. We're going to be reviewing a stool test in a few minutes, but doing a stool test to see what kind of organisms are living there and work on healing her digestion. Yep. All right. So I got those questions. Any new ones come in, I'll do after I talk to Laura, and then I'm going to look at the chat. And if we have any MDs on the line today that want to comment about the Coumadin issue, I would love to hear. There's Allison. Omega-3s, right, for the skin. Yes, absolutely. But that's already in the metabolic reset protocol. She was asking for stuff beyond it. So I'm going to read this question one more time for Allison, who's an MD and may have some other things to say. And I'll tell Allison what my thing was because I think it's important. This is a very important question. The question was from Nora, and it was for clients on blood thinners like Coumadin. It's not safe to take any supplemental omega-3s like DHA, et cetera. Is there a way to help them otherwise? And what else would be contraindicated in IRSPT? And then the most difficult part has been that my client can't have any greens at all, no pau-cactus, asparagus, broccoli, et cetera. What recommendations do we offer to offset these limitations? And my comment was that, first of all, I think it's mostly the EPA, not the DHA, that thins the blood, but there may be some, and I would look it up and look up Coumadin on drugs.com to see if there's what it says about omegas and contraindications. But the big thing I was talking about is, like, what we really need to do is be able to work with the doctors to adjust the level of Coumadin to the amount of good blood thinning omega-3s and greens and et cetera in the diet. So I think it's just a mistake to be for the medical doctors to just be like blanketing it and saying no. But from our perspective, if we recommend something that their doctor has said they shouldn't do, then we're liable. So we can't take that risk. But I think I recommended having a conversation with the doctor. But I'd love to hear your view on the whole Coumadin thing. And, you know, have you ever had a patient on Coumadin and on omega-3s and eating greens? Yeah, so she says, I know that the traditional medical approach is stopping all the things that are good for you. My aim is the same amount every day so that the anticoagulant effect is consistent day to day. That makes total sense. I recommend pharmaceutical grade supplements so that the amount in each tablet is consistent. Okay. Yeah, so that's a really big point, is the consistency, and I think that's what they're worried about. That's why they, you know, work with the diabetics and insulin. It's like consistency, because if they exercise more, they're going to need less insulin. If they eat crappy, they're going to eat more insulin, similar to this, right? So if you're taking omega-3s occasionally, then there's no way for the doctor to adjust your dose. But if you're very, very consistent in what you're taking and what you're eating, they can adjust you. And my understanding is they can adjust it for using like the prothrombin time to see how the dose is doing. Annette says, my ex has been on blood thinners for about 20 years and he takes fish oils and eats greens every day. And Allison said, yes, exactly. Okay, good. And I'm assuming you meant, yes, exactly, to the dosing and the prothrombin time. So thanks for that. Appreciate it. Appreciate you putting that in there, Annette, about that. It's really a matter of working with the doctor when they're willing to say, okay, we're going to adjust the Coumadin dose based on that. And get this novel idea for a medical doctor in Western medicine practice is, what's the root cause? Why does this person need the anticoagulant? What's going on and how do you address that? Oftentimes it can be an autoimmune condition. It could be something that is going to get better if you actually do the things they tell them not to do, right? Yeah, so Alice has said they're checking the prothrombin time INR regularly. So, you know, if you're in a situation like this as well, like Nora, I would actually have an open conversation with the doctor and say, let's work together to get this person on the best diet they can. We'll keep them consistent, and you just check their prothrombin times on a regular basis. Thank you. Now we have Laura and her stool test. I don't have any way to share this with everybody, so hopefully you have it in front of you. That's why these calls are not the best for labs. Sometime, I don't even know if the email anymore says to go someplace for the lab. I'm going to just look that up really quickly to see, and I can give you a Zoom link if we need to. Was there anything in that email that said, let's see. Yeah, no, because we took it out because we're not using Join Me anymore. Okay, if anybody wants to follow along, I'm going to put a Zoom link in the chat and then I'll share the screen. But please don't talk on the Zoom link. Just you know, mute yourself there because it's very confusing when we have people talking in both directions. So stay here, use the Zoom link just to look, and I'll actually, I think I'll mute myself on Zoom so you don't hear it, and you'll just hear me through this line. That's the way I'll do it. So let me give you that link. 1 second, and that way I can show you Laura's lab, and you'll learn better if you can see it. Let's see, which one will I give you? Let's just use this one. No, we'll use it. We'll use the NEPT one. No, I'll use this one. Okay, copy. I'm going to put this in the chat. And if you want to look at Laura's lab while we're going over it, oops, I didn't mean to do that. Just use a little, let me do this again. It's buried in there. It gives you this long thing. I just want to give you one link. Here we go. All right. Ignore what I just put in there. There's no way to delete it. Copy. And watch this. Okay. Okay, so just click, if you click on the word Zoom above, it works. Okay, got it. All right, I wasn't sure. Okay, click on that, and then I'll go in there, and let's see. I'll start it. I'm going to mute myself here so you just see it. Yeah, I'm going to turn everybody's – so everybody turn your camera off, please. And mute yourself, please, because we're not going to use this. I just muted myself. Yeah, we're not going to use Zoom for anything but screen share. So you'll still hear me through Instant Teleseminar. Otherwise, it gets really insane. So let me do this. I think I can do this where I just take everybody off and say no. I'm going to mute all, and then I'm going to make it so you can't turn your cameras on. Lock meeting, new participants. Okay. Okay, so I'm going to share my screen. Stool analysis, here we go. All right. Can everybody see my screen? Laura, you're unmuted on Instant Teleseminar, so go ahead and tell me.
Yes, I can see the screen. And thank you so much for doing this. I, like, just got the results Tuesday. And I know that these calls aren't really for that, but I was kind of chopping it a bit, and I was like, oh, if we have time, can we do this? So thank you for that.
No worries. Lynn, I think there's a way to put everybody so they can't, that we can't do. Video so they can't interrupt anyway. So I have this going. So diagnostic solutions. I haven't used this lab before, so it might be a little slow in me going through this. Is this something that your Lyme doctor recommended or how?
This is my functional medicine doctor, because in the past we've done a Genova and we've done a doctor's data, and he said that lately for his patients, he really likes this GI mapping, that it's been a little bit more effective in finding, like, some underlying things.
Yep.
The only bummer is we don't see, like, the sensitivities to things like with Genova, but it was kind of interesting. And it was a little bit less, I think, than the Genova, so we gave it a try.
Yeah, and I've heard of this. I actually spoke to, I think it was developed by Brady, Dr. Brady runs that lab, and I was having a conversation with him last year. He was telling me about it, but I was trying to get it so that I can find out more and see if it's something that we could, as our practitioners, that he couldn't figure out the legalities of it. You had to be a licensed practitioner to do it. So anyway, I dumped it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is just saying bacterial pathogens. That looks good as far as I'm concerned. Everything mm-hmm. looks negative there. All the virals are negative. All the parasites are negative. The Helicobacter is undetectable. Virulence factor just doesn't matter. So you've got your normal flora. You're low in your Bifidobacter and low in lacto. I know that you are careful mm-hmm. about probiotics because of the SIBO. Are you taking yeah. any probiotics right now?
I was. But what's funny is I think I need to switch now to do more Bifido.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Does the lacto get you bloated? Does something with the lacto get you bloated?
No, I think just the strain that I was taking, the probiotic that I was currently taking, just that wasn't a big one in it. It's funny. I was taking another one that was more lacto and bifido, and then I had kind of switched it, and I was like, oh, it looks like I need to switch back.
Yeah. Yeah, you need something higher. The other thing, I've been talking to a lot of people, that you'll hear me talk about this on the SIBO Summit when that happens in a month or so, is I talked a lot about the suppositories, about using suppositories. For people with SIBO, where you don't want to be taking multi-strain lactic acid-producing bacteria because it can aggravate the bloating, because the bacteria don't actually make it down all the way to the large intestine. They get stuck in the small. And suppositories can work really well. So I don't know if you're open to doing that. Implants, using an enema, a cleansing enema, and then an implant can be helpful as well. But not, I think the suppositories work really well. And you basically just take your favorite probiotic. I like powders, so it's easier to deal with. You melt down some cocoa butter, and you put it in there, and then you just let them harden at room temperature in these really cool little molds that you can get on Amazon. And then you insert them before you go to bed. You put a pad or something to protect it, because you will get some leakage. And you get good implantation. And you don't have to worry about stomach acid or anything else hurting it along the way. And so that way, if you do have trouble with taking the lactobacillus species and the D-lactic acid producing ones because of SIBO, you can actually get them, and you're putting them right into the place where they belong.
Mm.
So worth a consideration. It's not it's not as easy as just popping a pill, obviously, but the suppositories are a lot easier than an enema. A retention enema is a lot of work, because you have to do the full enema, and then you have to do the small amount and retain it and lay on your back for a while. But suppositories could be easy. I'd still recommend elevating the hips after you put it in, protect a pillow and that kind of thing. Anyway, so that's that. So your flora you need. You do have a Pseudomonas. It's a pretty high number. You were in the hospital. Were you in ice hospital or outpatient when you had your hips done?
Outpatient.
Yeah, because, hospitals are, it's a very common nosocomial. It happens in the hospitals a lot, the Pseudomonas. And really good book that everybody should have on their shelves as a practicing health coach and practitioner is Herbal Antibiotics by Stephen Herod Buhner, Buhner. And he has sections for each of the different organisms that are going to show up, whether it's on a stool test or if they're doing a skin culture. And he has all kinds of things that he's used, treatments effectively, natural treatments. So if we were to look up Pseudomonas in his book, we could see very specifically what kind of things are useful in general. Now, of course, everybody's different, right? And you might have developed a sensitivity or resistance to it. But I'm looking at page, 41 to 42. And he has it spread throughout the book, but he does talk about a little bit about these infections, like where they might have come from. And, that Pseudomonas tends to be, they tend to develop resistance quite easily. And he tells you which antibiotics these things and which herbs these things have generally developed a resistance to. So that was just that. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for description and treatment 65. Let's see. It's a really good book, and it takes a little doing to get the information. It's not like, it's not a layperson book, really. It's meant to be, but it's not. Pseudomonas. I had somebody who had come from, gone to the hospital to get surgery on her shoulder when she broke it. And when she came out, she developed these skin lesions. And they did cultures on it, and Pseudomonas was one of the organisms. So it's an opportunistic pathogen, takes advantage of hospital settings. It can live and even thrive on most surfaces and is common on most medical equipment, including catheters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you just in the, even outpatient, right, it's still going to be exposed. So this could be something that you picked up there. Mm-hmm. What else? I'm just looking, scanning through this. Primary herbs that are used for treating it, you can write these down, isatis, I-S-A-T-I-S, alcornea, A-L-C-H-O-R-N-E-A, bidens, B-I-D-E-N-S, cryptoleptis, C-R-Y-P-T-O-L-E-P-S, L-E-P-I-S, cida, S-I-D-A, black pepper, artemisia annua, the berberines, juniper, ginger, acacia, aroma, lomatium, ashwagandha, echinacea, and reishi. And so these are different ones, and he gives you different formulations that you can look at. But it might be worthwhile to just go to Amazon and get this book and kind of look that up and see. And then you can create, because he's given you enough that you can create a rotating scheme, right? If you find a bunch that you can do like 4 days, 5 days on one, and then 5 days on another, 5 days on another, and then rotate back, and then you avoid the resistance developing.
Okay.
Were you on any antibiotics when you had your surgery or before?
They gave me some during the surgery IV. Yeah.
So you've got some candida overgrowth. Could be from that.
Mm-hmm.
And another fungus called geotrypium, that's moderate, but the candida is actually quite high. I mean, it's a magnitude.
And that's what I was like.
Yeah.
I was so surprised because I was like, I eat so clean. Like, I'm not having any processed sugar or even like high glycemic fruit or. And I was like racking my brain, and then I was like, "Oh yeah, they gave me antibiotics."
Surgery. Yep. Yep. And your anti-gliadin is still high, even though you were off of it. It's high, so it's just confirmation. Yep.
Ask you about that because he said like your body does not like gluten, and I was like, "Yeah, I have celiac," and I was like, "I haven't been on gluten in like over 4 years, but that was still." So
yeah, that's the thing in stool. See, that's why I prefer to do a stool test to find out if somebody has gluten sensitivity. Because a lot of times people are going to come in and they've read about gluten and they've been off of gluten for a while, but they want to know for sure if they have it. But so if you're going to do a blood test, you have to load them up with gluten before you do the blood test, or else it's not going to show. Mm. Those are the active antibodies. These guys are sitting there waiting in the gut, right? They're IgA, so they're in the mucous membrane, and they're the guards. They're the ones that they're sitting there. So if you give them a drop of gluten, these guys are going to get active again. So they're sitting there and they're measurable. And that's why I love using stool for measuring gluten antibodies. Cause a lot of people get false negatives or they get a false sense of security when they do a blood test. Cause especially if they've been avoiding it or almost always avoiding it. Make sense?
That makes sense. So does that tell me, cause I was looking at that like, oh my gosh, am I getting an accidental exposure? Like, I'm really diligent about reading, like, what's in my, you know, shampoo and makeup and stuff like that. And I couldn't think of an accidental exposure, but, does that mean I can, I don't know.
You better avoid it like the plague, because if you have an accidental exposure, these guys are going to be jumping out and waiting.
Okay. I do. Yeah. I definitely do. So that's good confirmation there, because I didn't know if that meant even looking at like cross reactive foods for gluten, too.
Yeah, I usually find that the, because this is a test, like a stool test. If you go to Entero Lab, they just do the stool test for gluten. They say, no, you don't have to stay away from it. You don't have to stay away from it at all to be able to, I mean, you have to go back and eat it. You can be off of it for years and it'll still show up.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, the calprotectin concerns me because that's an inflammatory marker. And we often see that in Crohn's, and yours is six times the threshold. So,
and that's concerning to me too because after I eat, And it really doesn't matter what I eat. It could be a green smoothie. It could be even just like a thorn, like a MediClear with water and MCT oil. Anything that I'm eating, it hurts. I have a lot of pain after I eat, even water. I drink a glass of water in the morning when I get up, and it does feel like my gut is kind of on fire all the time.
Down low, and I notice, do you feel it up or two? Do you feel it in your esophagus or stomach, or is it only when it gets down lower?
Just down lower.
Mm-hmm. So there's possibly still some SIBO going on, or it could just be the damage to the lining from having this going on before. I don't see – well, your secretory IgA is not elevated. Usually if there's an active infection going on, you're going to see that secretory IgA be, like, off the charts. So yours is right there in the middle of the range. So it's not like you're, you know, fighting like crazy to get rid of something. But calprotectin, yeah, so do you have any bleeding from the rectum, any Crohn's-like,
you know,
ulcerative colitis-like? Yeah.
Remember how I was like passing the things that looked like parasites, like the worms? Like I had that after I did like a raindrop technique.
Yeah.
And stuff started coming out. Well, I'm still having that. And even like doing the stool test, I thought they were like worms. When LabCorp tested it, they said it was intestinal mucus.
Yeah.
But I feel like that lining of the intestinal lining is coming out, which I don't know if that would be happening with all the inflammation, but there's definitely something off with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I still have 2 to 3 regular bowel movements a day. That happened when I really cleaned up my diet. I was like chronically constipated, and then I feel like I'm getting stuff out, but I just noticed like it does feel like there's a stopping off of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So here's what I would say. Since you don't have any overt, like, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's type things, but you do get this doubling over pain, you do have some inflammation going on there, I would be looking at things to help restore that. So I don't know what you've done in terms of leaky gut protocols. Vitamin B1, 153 times a day, tends to plump up that mucosa again. Boswellia has been found to be really effective in reducing inflammation in the gut, and I've had a person with Crohn's disease take Boswellia for a few weeks and completely stop the bleeding. So that might be a good thing. A couple of good things to look at is those intestinal, like the rebuilds, the mucus kind of membrane things to build that back. And then let's see what your functional medicine doc also has to say about it, but that's my feeling about it. There's definitely inflammation there. Yeah.
He wanted me to do Enteromend, thorn. Enteromend, I think it's like a powder.
Yep.
That's got like some gut restore stuff. And I was doing, he had put me interestingly enough on a protocol of aloe vera and colloidal silver.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing that, and I was doing that like twice a day. And I do notice that kind of helps some with the burning. So I've kept doing that. And he said it wouldn't hurt, like with the candida, the colloidal silver wouldn't hurt. And the aloe vera is maybe helping to kind of put off.
Well, the aloe vera is definitely soothing to the whole thing. And that's why I said other things like that have that mucus protection stuff, marshmallow. And you just have to watch if it doesn't aggravate your SIBO type things. I don't know where you're at with that, if you retested it, but I know you tested high for that in the past. But, there's a number, so many products out there, right? We can go crazy. I usually like to talk about the individuals. My concern about any one product for antimicrobial is that you develop the resistance. Makes sense.
Yeah.
So I would say I like to individuals and rotate them, or a pair that you rotate, but rotating can be really helpful. And maybe, you know, trying some things that you haven't been exposed to before, because you're unlikely to be resistant. But that's a high level of candida. I mean, that's a magnitude. If you look at it, people say, wait a minute, it looks like 2.8, and it's less than, but it's 5.0 E3. E4 is an order of magnitude higher, like exponentially higher right? Mm. So it looks like, oh, it's half. No, it's not. It's, you know, 500 times.
Okay. And do you think, because I was wondering, like, I do eat, like, sauerkraut, kimchi, fermented foods. Do I need to pull all of those while I'm trying to? I drink Kavita every now and then.
How do you feel when you, like you said, you get burning no matter what you eat?
Yeah.
So it's hard to say,
I don't
right?
notice a difference, like, when I'm on them or when I, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and you're doing your vagus nerve stuff to keep things moving, and I don't know that I'd want you to stop that stuff, but you can certainly try stopping it, but if you're going to stop it, then do the suppositories, the probiotic suppositories.
Okay. And I do coffee enemas regularly, like two or three times a week to kind of help with the vagus nerve. And
Yeah, you're doing all those.
I feel better after I deal with them.
You do? Yeah.
Those have helped me. Mm-hmm. I've noticed a difference since adding those in.
I wonder sometimes, because coffee enemas are time-consuming and all. I've thought about this, but I haven't tried it or experimented with anybody, is like a coffee suppository, right? You do your brewing, your coffee, right? And you get,
So I don't know if that would work or not, but.
Just less messy and less, and you might be able to do it more often. It's just a thought, and like I said, you know, it's theory. We're good about exploring theory. Yeah, but the fungal, so you need some antifungal. Maybe what you need is some biofilm disruptors to get rid of this stuff. Maybe that's the missing piece if you've done these other antimicrobials.
Like serapeptase?
Serapeptase, yep. And usually what I do is I'll put somebody on like 2 weeks of a biofilm disruption protocol, and it's all laid out really cleanly in the digestion module, the CMDS module. I'll put them on for like a couple of weeks, and then I'll just keep that going. I'd be real intensive with the biofilm disruptors for a couple of weeks, and then back those doses down while I add in some of the antimicrobials and do the antimicrobials on a rotating basis. But you definitely need anti-inflammatory support down there. So you might consider Boswellia. If you have frankincense oil, do you have some frankincense oil? You can probably just put them in capsules.
Okay.
And take it down.
Yeah.
You might even rub it in your belly.
That helps me. Yeah. I do the Digestion oil, and I'll rub that on my belly after meals, and sometimes I'll take a drop internally, and that really helps, like, after I eat to kind of calm stuff down. But I haven't done the frankincense.
And I don't know the dosing because I haven't done it that way either. I usually have people get a tincture. And the results I've seen have been with tincture, like, you know, three droppers full of tincture a couple of times a day.
Oh, yeah.
But the aloe vera is great. Plantain is another one, marshmallow. The vitamin B1 I would do for sure, and probably maybe a little vitamin A. I don't know if you have the SNP, the BCMO1 SNP for vitamin A conversion.
I can't remember, but
vitamin
I could look that up.
Look that up, because if you do, then I would add some vitamin A to your regime. Just make 5,000 a day.
Okay.
Okay, good.
Sounds good.
Great. Thank you, Laura. Thanks for sharing. See if anybody else has questions.
Yes. Thanks so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Oh, people are putting stuff into the show. Now we have two chats going. That's why I hesitate to do this. Oh, funny. Let's see. Okay, let's see. Yeah, so Allison just chimed in that Calprotectin is used to distinguish IBS from IBD. We're now recognized IBS has inflammation going on in the traditional medical fields as last, slow to catch on. That's what they're saying for years. Yes, and my understanding with the distinction, when you look at calprotectin, the distinction between IBS and IBD has to do with the level. And I've seen a lot of people who had very slight moderate elevations of calprotectin, more than what you'd see in IBS. But when you get to up to six times the threshold, that it's concerning to me that there is some IBD, inflammatory bowel disease. So thank you. brands of aloe vera and colloidal silver. I don't have any recommended brands. I don't know. Does anybody else have them? Slippery Elm for sure. Yeah, we mentioned that. Coffee suppository is available through one of the companies I work with. Great. Michelle, that might make your life easier, Laura, if you can take them as suppositories. I mean, I'd still do the enemas because there's a much more profound effect, but if you wanted to do some of that in between. Yeah, Michelle, if you can share that company, that's awesome. All right. Okay, so we'll head back over to, I'll leave that open in case we have more going on there. Lynn, if people continue to type into that chat, I can't keep track of two chats at the time. I don't have your multitasking talent that way. But I'm going to look to see if there's other questions coming in Q&A, and also raise your hand. Let's see. So Jenny has some questions. On Dr. Shader comprehensive stool test in the yeast section, if Candida albicans is detected at the level of +1, does it mean that a person has a moderate Candida overgrowth? Yes. Would oat tests or other tests be suggested to further investigate? You know, at a 1+, you know, it's expensive to do an oat test. My feeling about it would be that, first of all, I don't know if on a 1+, if they actually do the culture and sensitivity. So if they've done that, then I would go with that. Otherwise, I would just assume it's a yeast overgrowth. It's a mild, very mild yeast overgrowth. And then just work with it that way. And then do the test. I don't think oat test doesn't differentiate. I would just use the stool test to go treat or to educate the person. We got to really make sure we're careful with our language, to educate the person about some behavioral and nutritional approaches that they can do to help their body to eradicate the Candida. Okay. One of my clients' food allergy panel done by Meridian, Candida albicans was indicated as moderate with an 80 with 100 high. I wonder if this lab is accurate enough to detect the severity of Candida overgrowth. Is it recommended to take another test? Let's just go slow. I know you're great with doing tests, and it's really great that you get your people to do them. But I think if you've got I would just put her on an anti-candida diet and follow it for 28 days, right? And you don't have to do severe anti-candida herbs and stuff, but I would certainly put her on a 28-day anti-candida diet protocol. And then also like the body ecology diet kind of stuff, or rainbow green live food cuisine, or what we have in our program is 28-day candida, you know, drinking the Pau D'Arco tea, the caprylic acid in coconut oil or MCT oil, and just really approach it that way. And then give it 3 months and then go back and do the stool test, especially if she's still symptomatic. But if her symptoms are majorly improving, the tests are nice and they're academically nice and they guide us in the direction, but we don't want to overdo it on tests. Okay. Let's see. Oh, wow. I figured out how to keep the Zoom chat open with the other chat. That's pretty cool. Who else has questions? Who else has comments? Who else wants to share anything? Valerie.
Hi.
I've
got a question about the oat test.
Mm-hmm.
I understand it's like a snapshot, and I'm wondering what time frame does that snapshot cover? Like if I've been traveling and not eating the normal diet that I would typically have, how is that going to impact the results of an oat test, and how long do I need to be back on a regular diet to see the true picture?
That's a really great question. Typically what they do is they ask you to stay off of certain substances for certain lengths of time, anywhere from 3 days to 3 weeks or 2 weeks. So when you do a stool test, they have you go off of your probiotics and all this other stuff for 2 weeks. For the urine, it's more volatile. I would probably be back on my normal diet for 2 weeks before testing it again.
Oh. Okay. And so then if I were to do the liver cleanse, that's going to push it out even farther.
Yeah, but it's going to be different after the liver cleanse. So you might as well do the intervention and then do the test.
That makes sense.
It totally makes sense. You know, because why waste your money on a test when you're going to do all this stuff to fix things, and then you're going to have the test results come back, and you don't even know if what you've just saw on the test is still there. I would think that the bacterial overgrowth markers, you know, those will take longer to get rid of because those things have to die off and decolonize, so to speak. So I would expect that, you know, an oat test would be pretty accurate on those for a few weeks. Like if you were off your diet, I don't think you're going to, for a week, unless you're super sensitive and you have things waiting, I don't think you're going to have a complete, you know, transition to a candida bacterial overgrowth from eating poorly for a week.
Right. And I wasn't eating that badly. I was at ShyCon.
Okay.
So I didn't get as many greens as I normally would.
Right. How was that? I wanted to go, but it was too close.
It was fantastic.
Great.
It was incredible. And they're coming up with new things about vitamin D testing, and just I haven't even gotten it all sorted out yet. There was so much information, but it
wonderful.
Was just fantastic.
Wonderful. Yeah, share with us, please. I'm going to order. I always order the tapes when I can't go, but I don't ever have a chance to watch. Somebody needs to create the Cliff Notes version.
Oh, that would be hard. There's just, it's like every sentence sometimes in those presentations is just a lot.
Well,
and we did workshops in the afternoons going through the pathway planners.
Oh, good.
So I got lost quite a bit, but I feel like I need to go back and listen to the whole thing several times.
Yeah, yeah, that's why. Even the ones I went to, I bought the tapes.
Oh, yeah. Well, back to my oat test question.
Yeah.
How much of a difference in the diet would cause me to hold off on doing the test as opposed to going ahead and doing it now? Now, I know we're talking about improving through a liver cleanse, but just for my own information, what kind of how big of an impact would I need to say, okay, I need to hold off on running the test?
Yeah, I would say that if you just completely don't eat greens or, you know, eating very little so you're not getting as many of the nutrients, because especially the water-soluble vitamins, those are very going to be very transient, right? Vitamin C, the Bs, you can affect those just by taking a big dose the day before. So those would be impacted. You know, I think it would have to be pretty dramatic.
The hotel was great. I went down and was able to get some arugula every night.
Good. I can't believe they don't serve greens. I mean, what's the story there? That's insane, because that's what he teaches, Ben Lynch teaches, you know, get a lot of green leafy vegetables, folate pathways.
There were some issues between the hotel the first lunch, and they got that worked out. So we had a Cobb salad the second lunch, and the third lunch we had some cooked collard greens. But see, I normally carry most of my own food. I typically don't eat at the restaurants and all, and it's hard to do the greens. So the hotel was great and gave me arugula at night, so that really helped.
That's good. Yeah, so it doesn't sound like it was terribly off.
No, but
but I would wait. If you're going to do the liver cleanse, that can profoundly change things.
Okay.
So I would wait and do that and wait for like 3 weeks after that and get it tested again.
I'm so chomping at the bit to find out, and so this is just making it harder.
Well, you know, it depends on how much disposable income you have, really.
Yeah. Well, I bought the oat test there at a discount, and then I won one in the raffle.
Oh, nice.
So I'm planning on doing one and then implementing protocols, and then I'll run another.
Yeah, I would rather see you wait till after the liver protocol, because that way the protocols you're going to implement are much more closely aligned to what's really going on right then.
Okay, that makes total sense. I guess I'll just have to be patient.
Just be patient.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, and...
Hello? Can you hear me now? I'm hearing myself. Lynn, open your line.
I can hear you now.
Okay. All right, let me hang up on this person. Just me.
It is a little,
it's echoing. It is. I have to hang up my web.
Okay.
Right. How about now? No, it is still screechy. Yeah, it is screechy. Let me try calling my... I think it might have been a...
The moderator has left the conference.
Yeah, that's Isabel. Let me try that. Hello? Yeah, it was Isabel's line.
I hear you.
Now I don't hear you.
Talk again.
Here I am. I'm talking into my speakerphone. It was Isabel's line that was squeaking.
Okay. Yeah, because now it's not.
Yeah, and as soon as I muted her, it stopped. Why am I hearing you through the computer? Speak again, Lynn. Speak again, Lynn.
I'm talking through Zoom.
Interesting. I'm hearing you through the computer, but I'm talking through my telephone.
Right, because you're talking through the telephone.
Right. Right, but usually, that's how I'm hearing you through. Anyway, I'm just going to play it through your ear. I don't know how I'm hearing you through my computer when I'm...
Yeah, because now you're really quiet.
You're quiet or I'm quiet? Something else. And Isabel has a question, but I'm not sure what's going on with Isabel's line, but her line was really scratchy. Let me try,
okay.
I'm going to try calling in again on the web line. Reconnect. And see if you can hear me. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me now? Yeah,
I can, but you're echoing.
I bet it's Zoom. I bet you're talking in Zoom. Mute yourself in Zoom. Yeah, mute yourself in Zoom.
I am.
Hearing you type. Let me go back to talking into the telephone. Oh, I know why. Because I'm talking into the telephone. No, it's muted. I don't know why. Let me hang up one of these. All right. How about now? Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
That's great, right there.
That's good? All right. Okay, so much for technology. Let's see if Isabel can open, and then I'll go back to answer Danielle's question, which I guess nobody heard me answer, right? Isabel?
Yeah, I didn't hear your answer.
Okay, so let me go back to Danielle's question. Danielle's question was, in regards to insulin resistance, we're advising our clients to not eat after dinner. However, my hubby currently needs to eat protein at bedtime in order to sleep soundly during the night. Otherwise, he awakens between 1 and 3 and can't get back to sleep. What am I thinking of? What am I not thinking of? So I, quite frankly, don't understand the question. Maybe you understand the question, Lynn, and can help me answer it, but I don't know what her question is. So, Danielle, if you can be more clear, like, what do you want me to, what do you want an answer to? First of all, if you want an answer to what should you be doing for him, there's a whole lot more information I need to know. Like, what is he eating during the day? What's his stress level like? What's his digestion like? Does he have low stomach acid and can't absorb his protein so that he needs the protein at bedtime in order to make it through? There's a number of things like that. So if you can give me more information, Danielle, I can try to answer that. Okay. Okay. Okay, so I'm looking to see if there are any others here. Okay. He tends to, so she further says, he tends to be hypoglycemic during the day, so I think that's what happened at night. Yeah, so are you, have you tested him, right? Have you, has he done his typical testing so you know exactly how each food's responding? Test him at the meals throughout and then go all the way to whatever length of time he can go and measure his blood sugar when you're, he's feeling what he calls hypoglycemic. Right? That's what I would be looking at. So without all that information, I can't really tell, but you need to be doing exactly what we lay out, which is have him measure out what foods, because a lot of times people will have a food that doesn't cause their sugar to go up, but it causes them to go hypoglycemic because they're overproducing insulin and they're not really insulin resistant quite yet. They're more at the hyperinsulinemic state. And so what they have is these meals that don't cause a high sugar, and then it causes a low sugar at around the 3 to 4 hour range, sometimes sooner. So those are the things I'd be looking at. Let's see. Okay. All right. So that's that. Let me see. And then let me go back. Hands up. Anybody have a question? Isabel, if you want to try again, raise your hand. Oh, there's two Isabels now. Let's try, I'll open one. Isabel? Isabel? Your mic might be muted or broken or something. Now I'm not hearing anything. No scratch, no nothing. I'm just not hearing you. Lynn, am I still on? Lynn, am I still being heard?
Yes, Lynn. Yes, you are.
Okay. Yes, Isabel's having a challenge with her technology. You might want to call in on the phone, Isabel. All right. That's what I had to do. All right. I think that's it. I'm going to check one last time in the chat. I'm going to check one last time in the Q&A. And we'll take one last look if anybody put anything into the Zoom chat.
I know Isabel asked on the chat if anybody can hear her, and she says, how do I raise my hand on the phone?
She already did raise her hand on the phone, and I opened her line, and then she showed up twice, and I opened her line both of the times, and nothing was there. So my sense is that there's something wrong with her mic, or that she doesn't have it set up so that the computer is reading the mic she thinks it is. But if she has a question.
She says open my phone line.
I'm looking. I did that already. Isabel. You raise your hand with the star 2 on the phone. 858? Okay, there's a third Isabel. Okay, good. It's always star 2 on here to raise your hand, by the way. Yes, hi, Isabel.
Okay, hi. Finally, we got this figured out. I think I'm on different, different phones. Okay, so a couple quick questions. One is, when I take powder herbs, I notice I get dizziness. So I was wondering what's, like, in general, what are in the herbs that could possibly cause, like, you know, feeling a little bit lightheadedness, a little bit dizziness?
Well, it depends on what herbs you're taking. Any
slippery elm? Yeah, I'm finding that slippery elm, the adrenal support herbs, the ashwagandha, the mushroom powder sometimes, and then astragalus. So I'm finding even like the Mighty Maca. I know the Mighty Maca has so much stuff in there that could.
So it causes you to have dizziness, or do you feel the room is spinning, or do you feel like you're spinning?
No, it's not spinning. It's just like kind of fogginess, very heavy, like heavy in the head.
And how long does it last for?
Like an hour. Like this morning I had slippery elm. And first thing in the morning I noticed, like 10 minutes after, I get like really heaviness in the head.
And does it happen regardless of what time of day you take them?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But the other day I had slippery elm and it was okay. So I was like,
So it's not consistent. It's not consistent.
But it's consistent with powder herb. Not necessarily one particular one, but I notice if I do powder herbs, it seems like it comes on more, like maybe 7 out of 10 times.
If you do what extracts, does it happen, or do you not do like the liquid extracts?
I don't do extracts. Yeah,
capsules. So you haven't compared it to the form of the way you do it. You haven't like taken ashwagandha as a capsule and ashwagandha as a powder.
No.
Seen it. Mm-hmm. So we don't know if it's that or there's just some sensitivity there.
I have taken some like the Gia adrenal support, but I don't do it consistently. So, so I couldn't really tell. Yeah.
Well, I would keep track of it for a while. I don't know what could cause it, quite frankly.
Okay.
You know, if it's happening with lots of different ones and it's not consistent with each one, and I would just keep track of it, like give it a number from 0 to 10. And
okay.
Then, you know, as far as that feeling is concerned, and then just keep a complete food diary and look at your blood sugar as well to see if there's a correlation with your blood sugar and see if there's patterns that emerge.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and compare it. It's easy to go to the store and get a tincture of ashwagandha and compare it and see if there's a difference there.
Okay. I'll do that. Yeah.
And some people are really sensitive. To stuff.
Yeah, I'm really sensitive to caffeine, like the green, like anything with green tea in there, powder, even just a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sensitive to
Could
that.
Could be sluggish detox pathways.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing, the cleanse, liver cleanse.
Yeah, yeah. Sluggish detox pathways that are doing it. Try tiny amounts, too. Like, just like try experimenting with the amounts. Does it happen if you put a teaspoon in? Does it happen if you put an eighth of a teaspoon in? Just start that way. Some people have to start with really small amounts. I start my sensitive
first,
like drop doses of things and then build them up. And that kind of works.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Good. Okay. I'll try that. Another question I have is on the sweet spot material. I know you talked about having protein first thing, like within an hour, so that, you know, our body doesn't break down muscle. So, and you also talked about fasting and like a one day fasting and intermittent fasting is good. So if someone is doing fasting for 24 hours or 20 hours, then they're not having that protein in the morning.
Right.
So does that mean that it's breaking down?
You know, what it means is that we just have to find what works for us individually. I mean, doing it once is not going to hurt, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's what you do consistently. And it's really finding what works best for the person's body. People who are adrenally fatigued and their cortisols aren't going up very much, they're less, they're going to be more sensitive to that effect, I think. I think it just depends. You know, on the person. And I see people thrive. People cannot do 24-hour fasts at all. People cannot survive without that breakfast. But there's research, too. You know, there's some really good research with intermittent fasting. There's really good research with protein in the morning. And I think it's just a matter of I err on the side of starting with the protein in the morning with people. And I'm going. And then people say, you know, I just feel so much better if I wait till noon to eat. So it's okay. Okay. Experiment with that. Okay, good. You wait till you eat, you feel better.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. So as long as they feel good, then it's fine.
That's what I
think.
Don't
have
coffee.
Okay.
That's what I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's good. Another related question is, I know if we eat fruit with some celery, cucumber, it slows down the glucose going to the bloodstream, but ultimately it still needs to produce the same amount of insulin, right, to get that.
But it's over time, right? It's over time. It's not a big flux.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. And last question is, I've been working with my husband on, he's got H. pylori and I think E. coli overgrowth.
Yep.
So I've been working with Steph too. I have this rotation of herbs and we've been doing it for a couple months and things are, the main symptom is a lot of gas burping, like an hour after eat or throughout the day. So it's pretty good, most of the time if he stays on what I ask him to eat, then he's pretty good. And it's at one point, it's like almost completely gone. And then he kind of went off a little bit and everything came back.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, like yesterday he had cantaloupe. I think that was it. That kind of triggered it. And then like it came back, right away. So what is it more that I need to do so that he could eventually have a little bit more flexibility?
I think you need to keep doing it. You keep rechecking, because if he's got overgrowth and cantaloupe is going to feed it, and did he have cantaloupe alone or with some other things? Because cantaloupe.
No, he had it after dinner, like right after dinner.
Yeah, eating cantaloupe after dinner is probably a digestive nightmare for just about anybody.
Okay. Yeah, that's
right.
What
you just ate a big dinner and you're going to eat this food that goes through really quickly and it ferments.
It's kind of hard because he's kind of tired of me telling him what not to eat. I saw him eat, cancer. I didn't say anything. And then he had a lot of reactions. Like, okay.
Yeah.
And I told him this morning, that's probably what caused it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of frustrating, too. Yeah. Like we've been working on this 2 to 3 months and there's like more and more food that he can't eat. And he's a fast metabolizer, so he's hungry a lot.
So he needs to have more caloric density with the food, and he probably needs more fat than
he
might be comfortable with to slow things down. I wouldn't mix fat with carb because it's a bad combination. So it's really a matter of getting him to stick with it long enough and then retesting and making sure everything's clear and then gradually one by one in a very methodical way, adding things back in.
Okay. So as long as he's having symptoms, that means it's still there, right?
I would say
I don't need to retest.
I wouldn't retest until he's symptom free or it's been like 3 months on a protocol to see if that protocol did any good. I mean, he still might have symptoms, but it's lower. The other thing to look at is how quickly is he eating?
Mm-hmm.
Does he eat fast and is he swallowing a lot of air and that can create gas and bloating
and
burping?
Yeah, he does. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I was being interviewed yesterday on by Michael Murray. He's written a number of health books and he said he had one of his funniest stories was this guy, he's like a 70-year-old guy and he just had all this burping and they were doing all this stuff, but he just couldn't get rid of the burping. He felt better in other ways, but he couldn't, and he worked with him for months and months and he finally had the thought to go out to eat with this guy and just watch him eat. And he watched him eat and he said the guy was this animated and talking and he like never stopped talking and he just kept shoveling the food in. And he told him, I have a solution. And he just said this simple solution of slowing down and not talking when you eat, have your meals alone, and the guy's problems went away. So you're looking for these other things and you want to fix those things, but if you fix all the things that you think should work and it's not, some of those real basic things make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that I have to address. It just was frustrating because we got it under control, like almost gone.
And then he says, well, let me experiment, right? That's the thing you run into with your husband, your mother, whoever else you work with, and your patients, is that you do this work, they're going, look, I'm better, and then they go and they think they could just go back to old habits. So they really have to educate them right from the start. We're going to take things away. It doesn't mean permanent. Mm-hmm. Some of the things are permanent because they're pretty bad for you. But we're going to do this, and then we're going to do it for a while. We're going to be testing to see once you're stabilized, we're going to keep you stabilized for a little while. And then once you're stabilized for a while, then we're going to start experimenting and adding things back.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Keep going.
Hey, no. Working with family is not the easiest thing to do.
Yeah, it's not easy, but yeah, it probably would be easier to work with Brandon than my husband. So
he seems a little bit more open to it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, good questions, though. Thank you. Because you know, it brings up stuff that we all deal with all the time, is that we know what to do, we tell them what to do, and they do it for a while, and then they think as soon as they feel better, they can go back and do it again. I always tell people, it's like if you have a headache and we determine that you're hitting yourself over the head with a hammer every day, and we tell you to stop hitting yourself over the head with a hammer, and the headache goes away, then you go, great, my headache's gone, and then you go back and hit yourself over the head with a hammer.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? The headache's going to come back, right? So, it's a cultural thing. It's something that, you know, the way people are trained by society and by the doctors and by just everybody is like, no. You know, if you need to use food as medicine, you just use it temporarily as medicine. And then you go back to the other stuff. Yeah, don't work that way.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
All right.
I'll be patient too. Yeah. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
All right, everybody. I think we're ready to go. I'll look to see if there's any other questions that have come in the meantime. No. Elaine says, suggestions for celiac patient with lichen planus in mouth, very sensitive to foods in Hashimoto's. Again, that's too broad a question. I don't know what the person's eating, how strict they are with their gluten control. Do they have cross-reactivities, food sensitivities? Are they doing antioxidants? Have they done a leaky gut protocol? Do they have heavy metals? What's their stress level like? So all of those things play into it. And Elaine says, I feel better with protein within an hour of waking. That's great. That's what you should do it. When do you fit fruit into the diet if it digests more quickly? I would do it, you can have it before a meal, like a half an hour before a meal. You can have it with fruits as a meal. I mean, with vegetables as a meal. So you would have it with like the green leafy vegetables, things that also digest quickly. And in between, but that's not a good thing to do in between. Lynn says, research from King George University in India studied 10 patients with chronic lichen planus for 3 months. They're given turmeric ointment applied to the affected areas, and what happened? After the first week, 9 of the patients had mild clinical improvement. 1 had no improvement. After the second week, 9 had moderate improvement and 1 mild improvement. After 4th week, 9 had marked improvement and 1 moderate. So that sounds pretty good. You know, and then all the toxicity stuff. And Elena says enema, castor oil packs, infused prune water, magnesium, helping with daughter's constipation, and will continue. Great. There's still something going on. Her stress anxiety is still through the roof, and I've got her walking, grounding, breathing techniques. You know, what tests have you done with her, with what we were talking before? You want to do something to assess her levels of nutrients. I would say the NutriVal would probably be a good one if you can swing that one and then go from there. Does it make the feeding time too long to eat fruit and then wait a half an hour for the other food? No, that would be fine. That's actually some of the stuff that they recommend in food combining. And, you know, I would always, I like to eat fruit. When you're dealing with insulin resistance, I like to eat fruit with greens because the greens provide a lot of the minerals that the magnesium especially that the fruit needs to take in. So good. Thank you. Okay, we're going to go. I have another question and call in another 10 minutes. That'll give me a chance to grab some water and all that. That's it. Okay, I'm going to open the line so everybody can say goodbye to each other. Thanks a lot for being here and for your great interactions. It was fun. And we'll talk again.
We'll talk again real soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks so much.
Bye. Thank you.